You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Are you still looking for a way to fit KBOO into your year-end giving? KBOO is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. For the last 14 years, Give Guide has raised over $28 million for hundreds of local nonprofits. Support KBOO and learn more about Give Guide by going to kboo.fm/give. Remember, we have a one-to-one match for all new and increasing donations, too. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
Listening to a very special episode of Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. We are talking tonight with some participants of the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil, which is going to be happening on Thursday. The event is happening on Zoom, so you'll have to register for it ahead of time, and then you'll be sent a link to the meeting, and we will announce that intermittently throughout the show, as well as it will be in our program notes as well. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
Yes, my name is Jean Bryant. I'm a regular co-host here on Trans Positive. I also use she and her pronouns, and I'm honored to be requested to read names and light candles for the vigil again this year.
Yes, my name is Ellen Simmons. I'm the clerk of the Worship and Ministry Committee at Multnomah Friends Meeting, which is a liberal Quaker meeting in Portland. And I'm sort of subbing for our leader. Well, we're leaderless. We're kind of a flat organization, but our clerk, Euclid Bautista, who will make the blessing and the remarks at TDOR, couldn't make it. So I'm subbing for him. And my pronouns are she and her.
My name is Rabbi Ariel Stone. I'm the rabbi of Congregation Sheir Tikva, which is the East Side Jewish synagogue, congregation I should call us because we don't have a building. And I'm privileged to be associated with TDOR again this year, and this year privileged to be the host of the first ever virtual and maybe hopefully last ever virtual gathering. My pronouns are she and they.
I'm Reverend Bill Sinkford. My pronouns are he and him. And I serve as the senior minister at the First Unitarian Church of Portland, which is in downtown at 13th and Salmon. Although like every other religious community, we are virtual this year. And I'm delighted that we're able to support the vigil again this year and the celebration, the recognition of the Trans Day of Remembrance. And I believe that I'm gonna be offering a blessing and a welcome as well.
Hi, I'm Steve Cromer, he, his, him. I am, I guess, one of the co-founders of the Interfaith Service. Is this our fourth year?
Yes, it is.
Emma? And I'm older than I was then. I guess loosely represent Portland First United Methodist Church, and we were also the original hosts of the event. I'm sending apologies for our clergy who just aren't available. The virtual thing is just sapping everybody's energy. Perhaps Reverend Sinkford, you can relate to that. Donna is getting, the Reverend Donna Pritchard is getting pulled six ways from Friday with the new COVID, the pause or whatever. She has to answer to the bishop, and there's lots of, are you doing this? Are you doing that? Or, to be safe. And it seems endless. Anyway, she is going to be recording a message, as is another of our pastors, the Reverend Andy Oliver. We can all look forward to their messages, I'm sure. And I guess what I bring is a historical perspective.
So tonight we are on Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking about Transgender Day of Remembrance, which was started, I believe it started in 1999. And we do have some folks here in the Portland community, not on this show right now, who were involved with the origins of Transgender Day of Remembrance. And unfortunately this year, again, we have had 34 transgender people murdered. Here in Portland, we have had three people who have died in the past year. T.T. Gully, who was found hanged in Rocky Butte Park in May of last year. And when T.T. Gully's body was found, she was misgendered. And when the news first reported on her, they reported on her as a suicide. Her mother stepped up and intervened and asked to speak with the press and said that her daughter was not someone who would commit suicide in that way. And so the case was reopened. It's still open as of now. And so we are treating it as a murder of a transgender African-American female in our community. We remember Nikki Kuhnhausen. Nikki Kuhnhausen was a 17-year-old transgender female from Vancouver who was murdered, and her body was found out in the gorge in December of last year. And the man who is alleged to be her murderer is currently awaiting trial. And then unfortunately this summer, Aja Roan Spears was murdered here in Portland, a 28-year-old African-American female who was murdered here in Portland. And so we remember, in addition to those three women, including two women of color, we remember the names of 34 been murdered this year since January 1st. And one of those is Aja Roan Spears, so.
Emma, I would point out that when we first started doing these vigils, we were reading the names of the worldwide list, and that this 34 number is just the United States. And again, it's just those that have been positively identified. And it's far more overwhelming than just 34 when we look at the worldwide numbers.
Yeah.
It's I agree, like, Jean. At our Quaker meeting, we've had Transgender Day of Remembrance always on the 20th, a memorial service, at which time we've had it for about 5 years, and we will have it this year as well on the 20th. We have read all the names, and that's just folks who have been reported murdered. Many, many reportings from Brazil. Which is so, it's just overwhelmingly horrific.
Yes, I also recall that when we first started doing these, we were also reading descriptions of how their deaths occurred, and it was just too abhorrent to continue to do that, especially some of those coming out of South America. Yes.
Yes. We did that as well. And it was just too awful. We have pictures on our altar that we would make in the circle. But reading of the way they were murdered was too terrible, too terrible.
So since we have representatives of four different faith traditions here today, I'd like to begin our conversation by asking representatives of our faith tradition if they'd like to make a statement or talk about why they're participating in the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil this year. Why don't we go back around to you, Ellen, since you just introduced your faith tradition a minute ago. And can you start with telling us about your participation in this event and why it's important from your faith tradition to recognize this day?
Yes, in my faith tradition of unprogrammed friends meeting, which means that we are all considered that the divine spirit can speak through any of us and all of us. We honor the divine in every single person. I was led by spirit to this work about 5 years ago when we realized as our community was not very welcoming to trans folks. We had some trans folks in our community and they let us know that. And I felt moved to join a small committee that started to work on these issues and bring some education, bring panels of people, you know, a big learning curve of education to our community. And I kept wondering, like, why I'm this old woman, why am I really being led to do this, but I really wanted to do it. And Spirit was really preparing me to meet my daughter, whom I had been adopted 53 years previous, and I had given birth to a boy in 1966, and given up for adoption because I just wasn't able to have a child at that point and raise a child. And I think that was just a hole in my soul for all these 53 years. And when through a genetic testing app that one of my other daughters subscribed to, we found our family member, our dear daughter, Catherine, who's a trans woman. And when we finally met and she came to Portland 2 years ago and we embraced, it was that like spirit was just healing us both. It was such a profound experience. And I am so grateful toward the end of my life to be able to be reunited with my daughter and to learn about her life and the struggle, you know, as a trans person. I mean, you know, she was raised by a wonderful family, thank goodness, was adopted before she was a month old, thank God, but struggled from toddlerhood of not being in the right body and put herself through going to the army, you know, to try to fit into the assigned gender. And, you know, fortunately, she has survived and she has thrived and she is doing really well. She's a tenured professor in Michigan and has a wonderful wife who's trans as well, two sons. And I love her so. So I feel, you know, this is a gift of spirit to me and to our community.
Thank you.
And I felt very upheld by my community.
And you did mention that the Quaker or the Friends Meeting House has been celebrating or has been honoring, recognizing Transgender Day of Remembrance for several years now. Can you tell us when that event will be?
Yes.
And if there's a way people want to, at the end of the show, maybe we can give a way
yes.
people connect.
Sure, I could email you that. It's going to be, of course, online on the 20th at 5 o'clock. It's going to be a simple gathering in silence for unprogrammed worship. I'm not the organizer, but I can forward the information about how to join that. We've had it in various ways. We've had it where we've handed out names as people would, you know, pass the basket and read names, and then in the end, release the names to a cleansing fire with singing. But this year, of course, it's going to be more simple. It's been a very profound experience.
And why is it important within the Quaker tradition to do this? Like, why is the Quaker tradition supporting this vigil that you're having?
Because it's in our theology, if you will, to honor all people, however they want to present themselves. All people are children of God or spirit. You know, we're pretty liberal, so we don't have a creed per se. You know, we worship together in silence, and if spirit speaks, it can speak through any of us. So we were, you know, we struggle to be more welcoming, and I'd say we have lots more work to do. We are not there yet. We're an overwhelmingly white community. We have very few trans folks right now in our community. So we are, you know, we have lots more work to do.
Thank you. Rabbi Ariel, would you please introduce yourself and tell us about your role in the vigil this year and why it's important to you from your religious and cultural tradition to participate in this event?
Thank you, Emma. As a rabbi in the Jewish community, actually, I believe at this point I'm the longest serving congregational rabbi working in Portland, which kind of blows my mind. I've been here since 2002 as the rabbi of Congregation Shir Tikva. It's clearly part of the prophetic theology of Judaism to proclaim, in the words of the creation story of Genesis, that all of us are equally created in the divine image. One important way of understanding, an ancient way of understanding the verse which says that the divine created the human being, male and female, is to understand the shockingly modern notion that all of us have male and female in us. We are all on a spectrum of gender. There are multiple genders all along that spectrum that express themselves. This awareness is expressed strongly in our blessings. We have a practice that one must utter a blessing for everything which one encounters in life, lest one be guilty of ingratitude or lack of thoughtfulness and consideration in life, that it's always good to remember who we are, where we are, why we are at every moment, and blessings do that for us. And there's a regular morning blessing which gives thanks for creating me in the divine image. In the traditional prayer book, it just kind of stops there. Thank you, God, for creating me in the divine image. But because it seems to indicate a static understanding of creation, there's a tradition in Judaism that you can always ask a rabbi anything that you don't understand. And in the 1800s, a rabbi was asked in a written legal question how to do that blessing in the case of one who has transitioned genders. Because the idea that one begins in a sort of an assigned gender and then grows into one's appropriate gender is not a modern idea. And so way back in the day in Izmir, a rabbi was received this question in a legal form, and the rabbi's legal answer was that what you're supposed to say is, I give thanks to God for transforming me into a man. Shehafchani la'ish. And so it's not a revolutionary idea. It's not a progressive idea. It's simply an idea that it's simply a recognition of the fact that God creates many, many, many wonderful things that we do or do not understand. And all we do, if we're ready and open to God's presence in the world, is to spend our lives with our hearts and our minds open for the flowering of our awareness of what already is in the world. So it's important for me to be part of this gathering, because on a very personal level, so many of my fellow Jews are trans. And so it's appropriate for me, as a rabbi who is privileged to be the rabbi of trans Jews, to be present and to recognize this mourning and this tragedy. Beyond that, as a Jew, I stand for the prophetic awareness that all people are precious, and all lights of each human soul deserve to be celebrated, and when they are violently put out, they are mourned.
Reverend Singford, would you please tell us about your tradition? Why does your tradition choose to support this event, and what is it about your tradition that upholds the dignity of trans and non-binary folks?
Thank you, Emma. I'll do that with pleasure. The foundational language in Unitarian Universalism is that we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And that has been our foundational language since the faith was created by the merger of the Unitarians and the Universalists back in 1961. So in fact, we're kind of a young faith tradition. And the language is clear. We understand that that language mirrors the more traditional Christian language, that we're all children of God. But we say that in our own language. The challenge for Unitarian Universalism and the blessing is to move that language from the very broad conceptual frame into the realm of real lived experience, and our faith tradition began doing that in the 1980s and early 1990s, when a program called the Welcoming Congregation was created. It was focused, to be clear, mostly on gay and lesbian members of our congregations. That's where it began. And making sure that lived experience was welcomed among us. But then, thanks to the voice and the presence of trans members of our communities, it became clear that there was more work to do. And so trans identity was added to the identities that needed to be received and blessed. And I resonated so much to Ellen's language that there is work involved in this, that it's not something which is one and done, because that's certainly been the case within Unitarian Universalism over the last 25 or 30 years. Missteps have been made in congregation after congregation, including the congregation that I serve, where we believed that we had taken some steps forward, and then had to be told that there were still many more steps ahead. I think what can be said for our tradition is that we are and have been thoroughly committed to doing the work, not only to welcome trans individuals, but to see them, as we try to see each and every person, as a blessing, and to begin to understand not only that individuals are blessings, but that there is a power in the pluralism that is who we are as a people, as a broad people, a power in that pluralism that the structures of our society have asked us not to recognize and not to access. And that there is real potency possible if we are willing to to see the blessing in all of those who gather in our communities, not just in our religious communities, but in our civic communities as well. And so that's the challenge. But I resonated so much with your statement, Ellen. This has been work. I was thinking earlier this morning about what I might say today, and remembering that when we left our building now 7 months ago, I had been looking at the paper signs on our bathrooms, you know, that say that all, you know, feel use the restroom in which you would be comfortable. But there's still paper signs. And that's our second attempt to find some language that will be respectful of all of the folks who gather. So there's still work to do, and clearly work to do out in the world. And so one of the reasons that I am so pleased that we are able to support the vigil is to reaffirm our own commitments, those who are cis and those who are trans among us, and to do what the religious community is called to do, which is to memorialize the dead and to recognize the blessing of their lives and help them in that transition. This is religious work that we do, and I'm so privileged to be able to help with it.
Thank you. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking tonight with members of the people who are participating in the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil. We're talking with several clergy persons, as well as representatives of different faith traditions. This year, the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil will be happening online. It will be on Thursday, November 19th, beginning at 7 p.m. And if you'd like to register for the event, we just ask that you register in advance. The URL is tinyurl.com/interfaithtdoor, and we will include that in the meeting notes. Steve, would you please share with us your participation in the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil, and why is it important from your faith tradition?
Well, I come from a Protestant faith tradition, Methodism, good old-fashioned Methodism. And I don't think I can be as articulate as my previous speakers, but what I can tell you is that we have a pretty direct tradition. We Methodists are doers, and the founder of our faith, John Wesley, gave us words to live by, and probably many of you have heard them, but they bear repeating now. And we are admonished as Methodists to do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, for as long as you ever can. And I don't know how much more needs to be said, other than my own personal feelings and, you know, experiences through friends are that sometimes faith traditions turn their backs on and even turn on people who are different or perceived to be different. At my church, Portland First United Methodist Church, we became a reconciling congregation in, I believe, in 1992. Very controversial then. Lost many members, lost some pretty prominent members of the community, people whose names you all know, in fact. But there was a core group of people who believed that this was what our faith called us to do. And I want to be on the side of communicating to everybody that the door is open. We need you, we want you, we honor you, and we want you to have a home in a faith tradition. That's what I got.
Thank you, Steve. Jean, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you you come from a unique perspective as a person of who practices a religious tradition. And I didn't ask before this interview if you would share, but I was wondering if you would care to share from your own particular tradition why it's important to participate in this vigil and maybe how your tradition addresses trans and non-binary identities.
Thank you, Emma. I do feel more than a little bit on the spot here. So hopefully you can edit some stuff out here for me, please. Okay, yes. First of all, the practice, the spiritual practice, because it's more of a spiritual teaching tradition than I would call a religion, is called the Sweet Medicine Sundance Path. It is founded in Native American understandings. I have been studying this path for about 6 years now. And it's a recognition that I've heard reflected in the perspectives that have already been shared here amongst those that have spoken before me, that we are all of us, everyone, is natural. We're part of the natural world. I'm not going to speak directly to the two-spirit traditions, those kinds of things. I am not about trying to claim a tradition here that is not of my own, you know, cultural heritage. But I have found that Sweet Medicine Sundance Path and some of those traditions have resonated for me wonderfully because of their acknowledgement and base in what I perceive to be what I would call the natural world and the energetics of what we would, I guess, what I would call divine masculine, divine feminine perspectives, and that we do embody both in various proportions at various times during our lives. That's the perspective that I come from. And I really, really appreciate what I've heard shared from the various perspectives already, acknowledging, I think, that basic principle. And then also I would like to echo, I think, what I was hearing, especially Bill, reflected in your comments about, regardless of our actual practices from any given faith-based traditions, that we all play out on this broader stage of the world, of the population at large, of our civic culture, and that it's wonderful that we can link arms here in recognition of there's work to do. There's work to do in the broader community and the broader society.
Thank you. It's been a really challenging and difficult year, especially for trans women of color. 34 transgender persons, mostly trans women of color, 27 or maybe up to 29 now, transgender women of color have been murdered in the United States in this past year. Here in Portland, at the Transgender Day of Remembrance Vigil this year, we're going to hear from Devin Davis and Lisa Kuhnhausen. Lisa was the mother of Nikki Kuhnhausen, who was murdered in Vancouver this past year. And the murder of Nikki Kuhnhausen is a reminder, and the murder of Titi Gully and the murder of Aja Roan Spears is a reminder that transgender women are especially vulnerable. Transgender women are vulnerable for transgressing social norms and societal expectations of gender presentation, as well as gender identity. And depending on the context in which a transgender person finds themselves, every day of their lives is an act of courage, because transgender people are constantly under the scrutiny of the dominant society. And we are constantly being policed for our gender presentation, even in cities like Portland, Oregon, which have a reputation as being very liberal. So the reason that we started the Transgender Day Remembrance Vigil was out of some of the organizing coming from Steve's church, First United Methodist Church. And there was a gentleman over there who was very interested in organizing an interfaith vigil. What I'd like to ask all of our faith participants today is, you know, Portland is a pretty secular town. and, you know, I love Portland. I mean, this is my hometown. I chose to come here because I know Portland was a good place for me. But I know that within the trans and non-binary community, there's a real lack of trust in faith institutions. I mean, a lot of us have come here fleeing a tradition that really just completely erased identity. And so many people I know, I've heard stories, people coming from the South, coming from the Midwest, coming from rural America, from traditions that erase our identities and tell us that we're invalid and, you know, drive us even to suicide. What can faith traditions do to kind of like push the trend in the other direction? You know, there's been so much damage done to trans and non-binary folks by religious traditions that it's really hard to trust religious traditions, especially for queer folks. It's very difficult. And a lot of people, they come to cities like Portland because they're havens. And so this isn't the kind of place like where queer people necessarily want to hear that there's, you know, any kind of religious tradition that like is celebrating their identities. Anyone, would you feel free to just kind of address this series of statements I've made?
May I tag on to your question, Emma, with an observation? That as folks who are so deeply challenged in our existential, you know, lives, that we, I think, as a population, crave at even a higher degree that spiritual connection, and it's missing so much for so many of us, and it's so essential to a healthy connection and a healthy life, that there's just such a tremendous need in our population, the trans and non-binary and LGBT population, for a spiritual connection, that it's an additional challenge, because everyone, I believe, is seeking one way or another that deeper spiritual connection. So if you could maybe bring that into your comment as well. Thank you.
I've been thinking a lot about this lately, Emma and Jean, because after the most recent problematic Supreme Court nomination and confirmation, I got into an interesting conversation on Twitter with someone who said, you know, I'm feeling like the last thing I need to see on Twitter right now is religious leaders saying, don't worry, I'll still do your wedding, which is a little bit of a simplification of the kind of support religious leaders are trying to give at the moment. But there was something really important in there that I've been trying to parse ever since. So here's what I think I see right now. We are in a city which is a haven for those who are fleeing oppression. The people who come here are not immediately going to be convinced that that which they fled is suddenly going to embrace them here. All religious traditions are not equal in the way they exist. Jews, for example, don't tend to put ourselves out there. First of all, we're not proselytizers. Secondly, we've been somewhat marginalized and somewhat targeted. The Tree of Life massacre was only a little over 2 years ago. And so Jewish faith leaders like myself might feel, and I don't know the extent to which other clergy in a state which is famously unchurched and nobody really cares if we show up to things feel this way also, but when we stay in our places and try to make them as welcoming as possible, we are not welcoming. It seems to me that, first of all, as a Jew, I feel that political and social action is absolutely vital to my experience as a religious person. I resonate with John Wesley on possibly only that level. And so the lesson, I think, for those of us in an unchurched place like Portland, with a lot of scarred and traumatized people around us who don't know that we want to embrace them and aren't necessarily going to walk in our doors to be embraced, is that we must be visible where they are. And this is not all that different from figuring out that in the movement for Black Lives, you've got to be out there where the struggle's taking place in order to be seen as an ally. So while we make our places as welcoming and as open as possible, which is the least we can do, I think we have to understand it's the least we can do.
Thank you. Reverend Sinkford, would you care to address that?
I would, and I want to thank you for the question, Emma and Jean. If you look at the record of organized religion over the last couple centuries, it's a miracle that as many people still come together in religious congregations as do. I mean, organized religion has disappointed so many people in so many ways, and yet there is the yearning for the coming together in congregations and in groups that make important the search for connection to that which transcends the individual. And to that which grounds the individual. So that yearning is something in us, given to us, that we need to have reverence for, and a kind of awe almost, that is who we are, that we are in some sense, even those of us who are most bruised by the experience of organized religion, we are in some sense deeply spiritual beings who are yearning for the kind of connection that religion claims to offer. And the role of faith communities, and that the communities that are represented here are all examples, the role of faith communities is to try to make the lived experience of being in religious community, try to answer that yearning and honor it and make it real. So it's a wonderful question here in Port.
Ellen, would you care to address that at all?
Well, if you came to our building right now on Stark, Southeast Stark, you would see a banner that says Black Trans Lives Matter. So you might think, well, that's something. You know, the meeting did agree when I proposed that in our meeting for worship for business, which is conducted in the way of worship. So it's not like ordinary consensus building or decision making. It's the spirit leads us, ideally, doesn't always happen, to arrive at unity around a decision or not. Now, if they joined on, you know, folks joined us on Zoom now, they might see a lot of folks that look like me. and not that many young folks, a few queer folks, and very few trans folks. So we have work. We have work. Liberal Quakers are well known through the years for spiritually inspired social activism. And in times like, you know, during the Vietnam War, now with the, you know, terrible last 4 years we've had and the struggle we still are going to have, you know, it's a long haul. People tend to come to Quakers because of our activism. But as far as finding spiritual comfort virtually, I think it's tough right now. Not being together embodied is tough. So that's what I'd say. And I think prophetic work is afoot. I am hopeful myself.
Thank you. Steve, would you care to address that from your perspective?
This is maybe the most difficult for me. I would say that we Methodists, if we're being honest, exist on a continuum. When those people left the church 28 years ago because of the decision to become a reconciling congregation, there was a continuum. And so the people on this side of the line said that was a bridge too far in terms of their faith understanding, and they left. But there are also people that were on the line and just over the line, not completely comfortable with the stance of reconciliation, but accepting enough to remain. And then from there, moving on to the total acceptance part of the continuum. And, you know, to a degree, we're still there. I mean, I'm going to tell you that there are Trump supporters in our congregation, and we find a way to embrace, and not always easily, but to move through that. And the same is true with scriptural and spiritual understanding. And so we're a work in progress, and we have pastors that are leading us in that direction, for which myself and my many of my friends in the congregation are deeply, deeply grateful. And so in terms of what, you know, the trans people in our community, they say that they appreciate the effort, and they want to be part of that, as well as the rest of the LGBTQ folks who are part of our congregation. So I guess I'm going to say we're a work in progress, and it's important to be honest about that.
Thank you, Steve. So we just have about 3 or 4 minutes left in the show. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. We are talking tonight with representatives of the Quaker, Unitarian, Jewish, Methodist, and what's your tradition again, Jean?
Oh, Sweet Medicine Sundance Path.
Sweet Medicine Sundance. Thank you so much. We're talking tonight about the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil. We're going to be remembering the lives of those killed on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. on Zoom. If you'd like to register for that event, it's a free registration. Go to tinyurl.com/interfaithtdor. That's interfaith T-D-O-R. And register for that ahead of time. Everyone you're hearing here tonight is going to be participating in some way in that vigil. Do we have any final thoughts? Would any of you like to share final thoughts? How to get in touch with your community if people would like to get more involved? Anything of that matter?
I'd just like to again say that on Friday, November 20th, which is the day of TDOR officially, that our Quaker meeting will have a 5 p.m. memorial service, a simple gathering in silence for unprogrammed worship, and everyone is welcome.
Thank you. We'll put that in the show notes too. We'll put the Zoom link for your event in the show notes on. Thank you.
To check a Multnomah Friends meeting out, just Google Multnomah Friends meeting. And get the newsletter. There are a number of worship groups that happen at other times than Sunday, as well as our main Sunday 10 o'clock meeting. We also have an 8:15 meeting for worship.
I'm Bill Sinkford. I just want to thank you, Emma, and Jean for your doing this again this year, and for helping us all have the opportunity to bear witness once again. And if folks are looking for a worship service, please go to firstunitarianportland.org. We worship at 10:15 on Sunday morning. We also have a family service at 9:15. You go to the website and you can just click and join us.
Thank you.
Any trans Jews in Portland or anywhere at all are welcome to get involved with Shir Tikva. The name means Song of Hope, and we are all partners together in right through the veil of the Zoom in staying connected and giving thanks for Zoom in order to keep us connected during these difficult days. And, you know, there's been a change at the top, but there's a lot of rot in the fish, and there's a whole lot more for us to do, and really important for us to stay lovingly linked together and to make space for all of each other's emotions and all of each other's needs in this time. Each one of us comes with our own burden. And in my shul, I am privileged that the congregational family of which I am a part is celebrating as best we can as scared human beings, our diversity and the strength that it brings us. And any Jew looking for a congregational family and a family of cultural heritage, because you don't have to believe in anything to be a Jew, really. You just have to identify as Jewish. I is more than welcome to come and check us out.
Thank you. And Steve, last word?
If anybody resonates with Methodist tradition, we are at FUMC/PDX. .org. Please come check us out.
I would just like to express my deep, deep gratitude and appreciation for the obvious support and outpouring from y'all in being part of this interfaith vigil and being supportive of the population that I identify with. I love you all. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for joining us tonight. Have a good evening.
Titi Gully. Nikki Kuhnhausen. Dustin Parker. Nulisa Luciano Ruiz. Yampi Mendez Orocho. Monica Diamond. Lexi. Johanna Metzger. Serena Angelique Velazquez Ramos. Layla Pelaez Sanchez. Penelope Diaz Ramirez. Nina Pop. Haye Jai O'Regan. Tony McDade. Dominique Remy Fells. Rhea Milton. Jane Thompson. Selena Reyes Hernandez. Brian Egypt Powers, Brayla Stone, Mercy Mack, Shaki Peters, Bree Black, Summer Taylor, Marilyn Cazares, Dior H. Ova, Keisha D. Hardy, Aja Raquel Roan Spears, Key Sam, Arian Burnett, Mia Green, Michelle Micheline Ramos Vargas, Felisa Harris, Brooklyn Deshuna, Sarah Blackwood, Angel Unique, and those we don't know about.
Thank you. KBOO is excited to be part of Willamette Week GiveGuide this year. When you support KBOO through GiveGuide, not only does it support your favorite community radio station, it also gives a little back to you in return. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get full access to hundreds of local coupons in the Chanel.